and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast, which is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven. We're recording this late on Thursday night. We wanted to do this later than usual. I guess that's the new thing. We're going to be staying up late doing these. The lottery was tonight, which we'll talk about in a minute. The Lakers absolutely demolished the Trailblazers tonight. To even that series at 1-1 was almost never a game. I'm a little concerned about Damian Lillard in the fourth quarter. Let me just tell you that Jackie McMullen is joining us from Boston.
Jeez.
Hello.
I'm sorry. I just went straight ahead. I'm sorry.
It's okay. We're all good, Wendy. It's all fine.
And joining us from Dallas is Timothy Band McMahon.
We knew you were a ball hog, Wendy, but geez.
You're right. How soon before you get banned from one of these Zooms, McMahon?
So far, I'm good on the Zooms. I covered Bob Knight's Texas Tech program for a year, and I used to wait like four or five questions in on his weekly conference call, and then I'd try to fire off a couple, and like I basically would ask him questions until he'd hang up. He hung up on me like six straight weeks.
You were an early bloomer in that regard.
Who's the toughest coach you've ever had to – who's the toughest coach, Brian, for you, that you had to ask a question to that was the most intimidating?
Intimidating?
Well, yeah, you know, like it was like, oh, I don't want to ask this, you know. Oh, this is not going to be
fun. Well, I mean – I spent a month last summer with Greg Popovich. They were frustrating days. I honestly think he would flip a coin and say, today I'm going to be helpful to the media. If it's heads and if it's tails, I will not be helpful to the media. And I don't think it speaks well of the character that he is. His triteness. I understand that he doesn't suffer questions he doesn't like, and that's totally his right, but his triteness belies his character, and a lot of people find it charming. I do not. So
it's so funny because when he comes to Boston, and I do think, I mean, I'm sure it happens other places too, when he comes to Boston, he is delightful. No matter whether the Spurs are winning, losing, whether he's happy or sad. So I don't know what that is.
Probably he's got a restaurant he loves up there.
Oh, I'm sure there's many, but you know, he stays a long time, usually 20 minutes, 15, sometimes 20 minutes. You can always talk to him afterwards. I don't always have the experiences that these other people have with Pop. And by the way, I'm not just talking about me. I'm talking about the Boston media in general. He really engages with everyone. I don't mean to make myself sound special. I don't want to suggest that at all. I'm just saying that there's something about the collective Boston media that he's fantastic. So anyway, Tim, how about you? Most intimidating. I always like to ask.
Bob Knight was lived up to his billing. Bill Parcells was tough. I'd never covered him on a regular basis, but chipped in some. And those would be too tough. It's obviously Carlisle and I have had our little tussles, but I'm proud to say that. I don't like intimidating, but I hear what you're saying.
Tim is not a man to be intimidated.
No, and Rick, I guess, probably can be intimidating, but at the end of it, he usually thinks about it and probably comes back around.
Yeah, there's been a lot of times where there's been a text, meet me in my office.
That's what Rick's like. I cover Rick as a player. That's how old I am. And he was even like that as a player. You know, he was a reserve player, but he was just smarter. Rick Carlisle. Yeah. I mean, he was smarter than all of us even then. And sometimes he would just, you know, give a little sarcastic and then he'd think better of it. And I just remember one of the old veteran writers going, does that dude know he's never going to play? Like, he knows he's never going to play, right? And I said, he's still smarter than us. It doesn't change
All right,
anything.
Jackie, your turn.
Oh, well, mine's easy. It's Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
I mean, years and years of Bill Belichick. And when I was young and eager, I remember once I was a little nervous and I was listing players that had come and I was listing them all. And he goes, Jackie, you don't have to list all of them. We all know who they are. And it was like, that was kind of funny, but it was really embarrassing. But sometimes he was just, you know, sometimes it was sport. By the time, you know, you'd been around a long time, you just sort of wanted to take him on because you knew he didn't take it personally. It's just how he was.
And, in my view, both of them are playing a character a little bit, and it's below.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's below the type of minds that they are. So.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And Belichick, you know, after a while, I just stopped going to his press conference. Well, I just went right to the
right. That's what
room.
He wants.
Well, of course. And I was happy to oblige him, you know, because when you talk to him, I remember I ran into him at a Celtics game once. This is kind of funny. He was in the back and they had just won the Super Bowl, the last one they won, I believe. And I happened to be back there. I don't know why. And he was looking for this guy that was one of the trainers or was working on the, you know, performance staff at the Celtics. And I didn't find this out till much later, but he was also helping the Patriots out at the same time. It was a little bit of a secret. And he was looking for this guy. I'm not going to say who, it doesn't matter. And I was coming out and I saw him and I said, "Oh, hi, Bill. Well, congratulations." And he said, "Well, hello, Jackie. I haven't seen you in many, many years. I'm sure you don't miss me." And I said, "I said, Bill, I do not. Have a great evening." Right. That was it. So, you know, as friendly as
can be. Hey, listen, I'm all for realism, you know.
No,
all right, well, we do talk about the NBA. Not that I didn't mind that diversion. Lakers played their best game in the bubble tonight, blew the Blazers out. I'm a little concerned about Damian Lillard, though. Late in the game, in the fourth quarter, he reaches into he reaches Anthony Davis, and he gets his finger caught in his jersey.
Actually, on his shoe, it looked like.
His shoe?
I think his finger hit the – I think the shoe kicked – like, he reached and swiped and missed and looked like the Davis's shoe kind of kicked up and hit him.
Boy, I did not see that. I thought he got it caught in his jersey.
No, I think I'm right.
I'm sure you're right. I mean,
you are right. Okay. Yeah. I think we were watching the replay while we were waiting for you, Mr. Wendy.
Well, we got to see all the replays, Wendy.
I was watching the coverage where he threw a towel, and it reminded me of when Chris Paul got hurt in a playoff game and, you know, knew he was in trouble and was all upset. So I just hope that Lillard's okay. It is his left hand.
Chris Paul of the minus 36 today?
Yeah. I tell you what, watching the Rockets play, people can criticize James Harden for the way he plays. They can say that they don't like it, and that's fine. If you don't like it, I'm not going to fight you on it. I don't like the way the Rockets complain about officiating. That drives me crazy. If you listen to this podcast for any length of time, you know about it. I can't stand it. Again, I think it's below them. For a franchise that is so elevated in so many levels, the way they complain about officiating drives me crazy. It's not acceptable. However, you watch the way they play, and to me, I love watching them play. I love it. I love watching Harden when he goes to work, and he was total surgeon today. And what did he finish with?
He didn't shoot it well.
21. Yeah, he hit 21.
But in terms of like his pass and the way he sees the floor,
it was great.
But for him to not shoot it well, for Russ to be, you know, a coach / cheerleader on the sideline, and for them to win convincingly, it's pretty encouraging. And by the way, how about Jeff Green?
Daniel House. How about Daniel House, baby?
Real quick, speaking of Russ on the sideline,
Iron Maiden,
you
come
have
on,
that
baby.
Same shirt.
I'm digging it. Iron Maiden. Come on now.
David Stern sideline dress code is officially gone the way of David Stern. May he rest in peace. He was wearing an Iron Maiden. Was tie-dyed, right? Tie-dyed shirt.
I don't think it was tie-dyed, but it was like
– it was cut off. It was cut off.
Yeah, he was totally cut off the sides of it.
It was sleeveless, and it was showing a lot of side whatever you want to call it. There was a lot of torso exposed. I'll put it like that.
That's crazy. But anyway, so, you know, Harden sort of played really well without scoring. LeBron, tonight's game, 10 points. Now, I don't have the – I should check with our stats people. I'm sure they've compiled it here in real time. I find it hard to believe LeBron's won a playoff game before when he scored 10 points. And if he has,
I wondered that. Yeah, I wondered
if he
that.
Has, it's been decade plus.
But so what's interesting about the Lakers, you know, just demolishing Portland, is that It, I mean, LeBron was good, of course, but it was really about Anthony Davis.
He was awesome.
And Anthony Davis was so bad. And I don't care what the numbers were, game one, he did not do what they needed him to do. He was not aggressive.
He was 8 of 24 in that game. Yeah. Shooting.
Well, but he just wasn't. Yeah, it just wasn't who he needed to be. He was absolutely who he needed to be in this game. But I will say this, and maybe I shouldn't, because maybe LeBron just knew this game was in hand and, you know, he knew that he was going to get Jared Dudley some minutes, and so it's all fine. But I still am waiting for the LeBron that's going to impose his will on this series. And I don't feel like I've seen it yet.
Yeah, and it's interesting to say that, because he had a, you know, 20-whatever point, I think 15 rebounds, 17 assists, triple-double in game one. But it wasn't
right.
– I hear what you're saying. And I,
you know what I mean,
and
right?
He still, yeah. He's physically, I think he's trying to get right with that groin. But they obviously need Anthony Davis to play like a superstar. This is really the first time we've seen that, I think maybe even in the bubble. And then, obviously – the Blazers need Dame to be, you know, a bubble MVP type of player. And, you know, that didn't happen tonight. We'll see how Dame does going forward with this dislocated finger. This is his left hand. Obviously, that can affect ball handling, but it's not his shooting hand. But, and then, you know, it's not like the Lakers shot the ball great, but they at least weren't like league worst from three-point range in this game. And that makes a huge difference.
You know what it felt like to me, guys, and I don't know if you felt this way. You know, there's some we say some things about, you know, that the NBA is predictable sometimes, and when you steal game one from the home team, and I know there's no home court, but you steal one game, you go, all right, we've done our job. We need to win one of the first two. We've done our job. It felt a little bit like that to me tonight with the Blazers for this reason. I thought they were gassed in game one until Dame hit that 36-foot three-pointer, and then he brought them back to life. Nurkic was sucking wind. Dame looked exhausted. CJ McCollum looked uncomfortable. We know he's playing with the broken vertebrae in his back. They were re-energized by that long three, and then off they went from there. CJ hit big shots, Gary Trent, so on and so on. That's game one. Tonight, I just think the pace that they've been playing at, every game that they've played in this bubble has been a must win. I think that is mentally taxing, and I think tonight you really saw it. It looked to me they were a very tired team from the very opening tip.
Tired, flat team. And, you know, Carlisle, after they beat the Clippers last night, the phrase he used was that the Mavericks would be fighting the human nature curve going into game three.
Right.
And
very good.
And I think that the human nature curve, plus just like you said, the physical fatigue factor probably caught up to the Blazers tonight.
Yeah.
You know, the Blazers are starting a undrafted rookie at power forward. And I think one of the defining moments of game one, Wenyen Gabriel out of Kentucky was signed by the Kings and traded in a throw-in, probably, really, in the Trevor Ariza deal where Kent Bazemore went down to Sacramento. He was mic'd up in game one, and I'm sure he was over the moon to be asked to wear the mic. And the mic caught him. I think he was talking to an official. But the mic caught him right before tip-off saying, oh, my gosh, this is my first career start. I'm really excited.
That's
and
great.
That was the guy that the Blazers assigned to Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
Right.
And Anthony Davis shot 8 of 24. So what I think happened tonight was Anthony Davis said, look, I am not going to let them get away with either putting a slow center on me, which he ate Yusef Nurkic alive multiple times, or a rookie who's literally just happy to be there. He played like that tonight. Now, I actually felt Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who was 0 of 9 in game one, hit his first two threes in the first 3 minutes.
Right. That was big.
And I felt that sort of released some of the tension. And, you know, in my view, the Lakers, you know, there's going to be a certain number of games where Anthony Davis plays great and they're going to win. There's going to be a certain number of games where LeBron plays great and they're going to win. But in those other games, when those guys aren't great, and maybe it'll be 5 games, maybe it'll be 2, maybe we already saw the 1, can the Lakers cope? So in this game, the supporting cast played really well and Anthony Davis played great. That's, you know, if they sort of get 2 of the 3, LeBron, yeah. Anthony Davis, and their supporting cast, they're going to be okay. It's just a question of how often is that going to happen? And, you know, and you mentioned, I mean, the challenges are now compounding for the Blazers. First off, it's the second straight game they failed to shoot over 40% against the Lakers. I felt the Lakers, the one thing they did in the bubble, the first few games, especially that Clipper game coming out of the gate, they played really aggressive, high-energy defense. And they've been doing that the last two games. Their defense has been good. They have disrupted the Blazers. And tonight, they brought an extra guy up. When Dame was on the perimeter, they brought an extra guy up to sort of defend against his anything about him coming off of a pick so that there would be a sort of a guy in his face. They extended their defense on him a little bit. I do think it helped. You know, I LeBron is going to have to play at a very high level for the Lakers to win three Western series. And so that's going to be an interesting thing to watch.
By the way, per our stats and information group, our beloved stats and information group, this is the fewest points that LeBron has ever scored in a playoff win and tied for the third fewest that he has scored in a playoff game, period.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. You know, so
we remember the fewest, don't we, McMahon?
No, it's not. It's not in the 06 or I'm sorry, 11 finals.
It was the worst game of his career.
It was a terrible game, but it wasn't the fewest. It was January 07 against the Bucks and December 03 against the Hawks. He had 8 points in both of those games.
Interesting.
Wait a minute. Time out. Game 5, 2011 playoffs, 2011 finals.
Yeah, he stunk it up. I'm just telling you what his fewest points in a playoff game were.
He scored 8 points in that game.
I'm going to look it up.
It was the worst game of his career.
Right after I bragged about
changed
our
his changed his whole career. Wouldn't we argue? I think his whole career.
He's got this streak. I don't even know how long the streak is. It's like 850 games of 10 points or more. It's the longest streak in NBA history, but it's regular season games.
You're right. They admitted that. I'm gonna have to reply in the Slack and show how smart I am.
Well, yeah, because remember Michael Jordan had that regular season record.
But they have to spend regular season, Jackie.
Well, I know. But there was a famous story about that Michael Jordan record. He was playing for the Wizards and Doug Collins was the coach, and they were losing a game. And you know, it was just he just thought Michael looked tired and maybe he looked a little gimpy. You know, he was having knee problems that year. So he had 8 points and Doug Collins took him out and didn't know about the streak. And at the end of the game, you know, he realized it with horror what had happened. And then Jordan went to him the next day and said, "Do you still think I'm good?" And Doug Collins is like, "What?" And he goes, "Of course I do." He goes, "So you still think I can play, right? You're just not like I'm just not hanging on." He goes, No. So he said, "Okay." So the next game he came out, he had like, I don't know, 30 points or something crazy like that. He had the next two games, he had like 30 plus points. That's Michael Jordan.
Well, what's crazy about that is that like up till Jordan's last year, he was still playing like 42 minutes.
No, of course he was. Yeah. You know. So I want to get back to LeBron if I can, Brian. There was something that David Thorpe, who I like a lot, who was our former colleague here at ESPN and now writes it for True Hoop. And he made a point today in one of his stories on True Hoop about watching LeBron and how LeBron didn't want to go left, and that his experience, because he trains players and worked with players for many years, was that generally when you won't go off your offhand, that means you might have some lower body injury or some issue regarding pushing off, which I think would be, I'm assuming, the groin. Although I noticed when LeBron walked off tonight, he had two huge ice packs on his knees. I'm sure that's just standard procedure for him, standard procedure post game. But so anyway, I thought that was an interesting observation from David Thorpe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they've listed on the injury report with the groin injury. He, you know, had the left groin injury last year and then has had the right groin injury this year, you know. Signs of getting older, but they are going to have to. I just put it this way: if you're a Laker fan and you're looking for something to say, you got something going. That defense is what you got going. Before we talk about the lottery, which was tonight.
By the way, I screwed this thing up bad. That was the fewest points in a playoff win. The fewest points in a win, period, were 8 against the Bucks, 8 against the Hawks. I screwed up the list. So my apologies for trying to correct our stats information group. Let's go on after I made a fool of myself.
I'm going to tell you, I'll never forget game five. There's a lot of things I'll never forget about LeBron's career, but I'll never forget game five, 2011.
Jose Juan Barea.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.
So, McMahon, you spend a lot of time covering both the Mavericks and Rockets. You're covering those series right now. The Rockets have been extremely impressive. The only series in the West that's 2-0 is the Rockets series. Even without Russell Westbrook, what's the vibe coming out of Houston right now? I mean, they've got to be looking over at. I mean, we're talking about the Lakers. We're not blown away. They played great tonight, but you know, yeah, we're not blown away.
The Clippers are in a little scrap with the Mavericks. They can't figure out how to slow down that Dallas offense right now.
I think the team in the East that is sort of looking around going, huh, is the Raptors.
Yeah.
Because they're looking at the Celtics going, well, Gordon Hayward's going to be out for the playoffs because I don't think no matter what happens, a grade 3 ankle sprain is not a 4-week injury. I wish him the best, but I doubt there's ever been a grade 3 ankle sprain that's been a 4-week injury. That's a 2 to 3 month injury.
Well, you know what though? I've been looking this up because I had this argument with our pal Tim Bontemps, who said the same as you, which I understand and appreciate and respect. So the closest I could find was De'Aaron Fox. He came back after, I think it was 33 days. Hmm. Just for food for thought. Okay. Continue.
All right. But the Raptors are sitting there going, you know, the Bucks aren't looking so great. The Celtics are good and they're going to win that series, but they're down one of their good players.
Really important player to them.
And if I'm the Rockets, now we're only two games in, where let's not overreact, but if I'm the Rockets, I'm like, you know, the Lakers aren't exactly blowing the doors off of people and they haven't blown the doors off the people here. The Clippers are not looking like the formidable opponent that we thought they would be. And, you know, Denver and the Jazz, respectable, but they wouldn't see them till the conference finals. Rockets must be. I'll bet their shoulders are back and their heads are high right now.
Oh no, and they feel like, you know, look, they're up 2-0 without Russ, with Harden today, you know, not shooting it well at all. They're playing really good defense, and that's something they're excited about.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
listen, I know people like to kind of say, oh, D'Antoni doesn't coach, all they do is ISO, he just rolls the ball out. Man, that guy, for him, like this little wrinkle that he's come up with for the series of Jeff Green being a point center.
I know.
And
it's
they're
amazing.
Running pick and roll. They're like, okay, you can't trap James Harden if he's setting the screen in a pick and roll with the center running the pick. And it's not, they didn't do that. You know, Jeff Green wasn't with them for most of the season, first of all. This is not something that he had it in his pocket. They pulled it out here. And, you know, you have to give D'Antoni credit. Ben McLemore, a guy who could not keep a job in the NBA, has been a great role player for the Rockets. Jeff Green, a guy who was on the scrap heap after the Jazz dumped him in the middle of the season, has been a great role player for the Rockets. You know, P.J. Tucker, he's been a solid role player for several teams, but, you know, perfect fit with the Rockets. Daniel House, a guy, G League, waivers, so on and so forth.
Undrafted.
Yeah, I mean, you know, D'Antoni plays the West Virginia dummy role, all shucks. He's an awfully good coach, though.
Of course he is. And I've never understood why his job is allegedly in jeopardy. Yeah, it just makes no sense to me whatsoever. No,
two-way street there. Two-way street.
No,
there.
I get that. I get that. There's bad feelings. You know what was also remarkable about that Rockets game today? Did you look at Eric Gordon's stat sheet?
Mm-hmm.
0-for-10 from the three-point line.
And his plus-minus was through the roof.
The roof. And they still won going away. But Jeff Green, and I've covered Jeff in a bunch of different towns.
He's been in a lot.
He has. But he was one of the biggest teases to me because there were times when you would watch him play and you'd think, this guy's going to be a perennial all-star. He's got all the gifts. He's got all the tools.
6'9", athletics, just, you know, smart, skill, can put it on the floor. Smart, yeah.
But didn't, you know, motor was an issue with him. And of course, remember too, he did have open heart surgery, which I always like to remind people of. And I always liked him so much too, but he'd have a game that, you know, like this game, and then the next game you're like, okay, and you know, he wasn't
well
there.
he's had two really good games in this series.
I mean, and I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting like crazy for him. I'm rooting like crazy for him.
But yeah, so you mentioned Gordon 0-for-10, Harden 2-for-11 from three. So
it's unbelievable,
yeah, they're 2-for-21 from three with those two guys, and they win it going away with Russ on the bench.
Austin Rivers looks really good right now too. I mean, I don't know if he can keep it up, but he just was playing with so much confidence today.
He made Chris Paul look really bad.
Yeah, Chris
with Austin Rivers' third dunk of the season, blowing by Carlton Banks and
that
going up
counted, and that should have counted for two dunks. That was a hell of a play.
My boy Shea played well though, didn't he? I love Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. He had himself a game, but no one's going to talk about it because they got waxed. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, they just boy, do they just – I mean, for a team that I thought was really coming together, they just took a step slow. And I'm not just talking about Chris Paul, but just the whole team. And I don't know, maybe that's the effect of playing the Rockets.
I was going to say, you play small ball, you chase those guys up and down. I think they make a lot of people look that way.
I was I'm surprised. I picked the Thunder to win the series, and, you know, there's still a lot of the series left, but that's not looking so smart right now.
You picked the
now.
Thunder, huh? I'm surprised.
Well, I really just look, Russ, I don't think Russ is playing in this series.
Yeah, it looks.
And so, you know, you take away Russell Westbrook.
Well, you're not going to play him for a while now. I mean, you're going to keep him over there. Just see if you can get through it.
Right.
Yeah, and D'Antoni kind of acknowledged that, hey, it's different. You know, there's certainly not the same sense of urgency to get Russ back in the mix, but they're also, you know, they need to get him right if they're going to make a deep playoff run. And
well, for sure,
you know, a strained quad for a guy with that kind of explosiveness, they've got to be careful.
Well, what are they listing him as? Are they listing him as questionable? Or
no, he's out. Okay. He's out.
So the word I heard on him is that he's not game to game right now. He is out.
Yeah.
You know, because I think I saw people say, well, we'll see about game three. And I'm like, no.
No, D'Antoni, who D'Antoni's not a big bluffer on injuries at all. And what D'Antoni is saying is he's getting better, but we don't have a timetable. And that's, you know, I don't think there's any gamesmanship there. I think that's just the truth. I would be maybe if the Thunder come back and really stretch this series out, we'll see Russ at some point.
Hallowed be thy name, baby. Hallowed be thy name.
But I don't think we'll see Russ in the first round. We'll see. I mean, 8 years in college, not a doctor, but 8 years in college.
Right. That's a little Iron Maiden reference in case you guys aren't Iron Maiden.
Oh, there
fans.
You go.
Okay. I was still laughing about 8 years in college. Did you really have 8 years in college?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who was paying for it?
Well, I had what I refer to as a senior era. Where in my defense, I was making $9 an hour at the Denton Record Chronicle working full time for that senior era.
Okay.
So, you know, working those 70 hour, I was a full time student when I got the gig and I flunked the hell out of that semester.
Wow.
Matter of fact, one of the classes I flunked, somehow my daughter's got a hold of my college transcript.
Oh,
and
you
should have heard and that. One
I
of
think
the classes
you need to talk to your ex about that.
Well,
credibility is destroyed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, they knew I wasn't the smartest guy in the world. That's obvious. But one of the classes I flunked was Asian politics. Well, their mom is Thai. And as my older daughter Bailey said, well, no wonder you guys got a divorce.
Oh no.
Well, we could go way deep into that, but wow. I'm not gonna do that right now.
Wow.
McMahon, your feeling on the Mavericks chances in that series. I mean, yeah. I have been on the Clippers bandwagon for 13 months now. It's been a long, winding, torturous road. And obviously they are not playing the best basketball. The Mavericks are a big reason why. I'll tell you what, they are a scary ass team both now and going forward.
Well, and the Clippers, if you're talking about going forward for the next 12 years or so, I mean, the Mavericks have a chance to be a contender for a long, long, and they're not there yet, I don't think. But, I mean, it's coming soon, and it's got a chance to last a long time with Luka and, you know, Porzingis and whatever they are able to put around those guys. As far as this series goes, you know, look, the Clippers have some problems. Pat Beverly's not healthy, right. You know, missed game two. And look, he ain't stopping Luka. Luka's too big. But he can deal with Trey Burke. He can deal with a Seth Curry, guys who killed the Mavericks off the bench in that game. Poor Doc Rivers getting torched by his son-in-law. Unfortunately, Montrezl Harrell missed the entire season schedule and, you know, tragic circumstances with his grandmother passing away. But he's trying to chip off rust in a playoff series, and he's just not close to himself. And if he can't be, you know, sixth man of the year, absolute offensive stud, then Boban causes major problems for him on the other end of the floor.
Yeah. All true. And Paul George didn't play well. You know, he didn't play well. And, you know, it's so funny when this always happens in the postseason, but when you're a star and you get big money and you demand to be traded all these places like he has been, you have to deliver. And
you talk all that stuff about Dame. I know. I want a Dame to fire off a troll tweet bad last night.
I agree. So, and, you know, even with the Bucks win today, the only thing I was looking at was how did Chris Middleton do? And they won big today, but he still hasn't played well either. And how far can the Bucks go if Chris Middleton can't step up? How far do the Clippers go if Paul George can't be there every night like Kawhi has been?
Yeah.
It was an uninspiring. I mean, you know, they were comfortably in control the whole game, the Bucks, but it was an uncomfortable. It was uninspiring.
The Bucks, you mean?
Yeah, uninspiring performance today.
You by the Bucks?
I mean, I just
see. I disagree with you. I disagree with
you. It was all right for what it is, but yeah, it wasn't all
that. But see, here's why it was important. It was because if they didn't win big like they did, and if Giannis didn't have 25 and 20 in like 30 minutes, we'd all be saying, oh, the Bucks. And they did exactly what they had to do, and they did it right away. They got the game going downhill. They got the Magic, forced the Magic into running up and down the floor. And when they do that, when they can score in transition against anybody, Magic, anybody, they have a chance to win. And that's, to me, I just look for certain things, and that was one of them. Just like you were mentioning, Brian, with the Lakers, I was like, who's going to just hit a couple of early threes so they can all relax and pull the lid off the basket? And Pope did that for him. I mean, let's not be too specific about it. That's all I wanted to see from the Bucks, and we saw it in the first 6 minutes of the game.
So getting back to the Mavericks, I'm just going to say that in the 2021 summer, they have $72 million on their books.
Hey, are there any like superstar free agents that are going to be in that market?
I mean, like
any Europeans to add to their European alliance? I'm just asking.
I mean,
I can't believe this is you guys are talking about in the middle of the NBA playoffs.
Well, but I'm assuming, but
he brought it up. I'm just asking questions.
But you know, you don't think they're leaving an impression right now?
No, like, it's too soon. No, I don't. It's too soon. A million things are going to happen between now and then. A million things.
Luka, and like a million things can happen in Milwaukee's favor. That's right. True. Luka's a guy people will want to play with.
Well, there's sure. No question. But people want to play with Kawhi Leonard too. So, I mean, you know, people want to play with Paul Dame George Lillard. Did. So, you know.
There's a million things Luka Doncic hasn't done, but just you wait.
And what's crazy about that win for the Mavericks in game two, Luka played 9 minutes in the second half.
I know, that was great. It was in foul trouble.
He dominated the first half, picked up fourth foul in the third quarter, and a really, really dumb foul in the first minute of the fourth quarter. Sat all that time, and you know, Trey Burke and Seth Curry and you know, the Mavs bench, they kept the, you know, kept the thing afloat. And here's the thing, they had to do that because close games the Mavericks will not win. They are the worst clutch team in the playoffs by right. far, and they're not going to beat the Clippers if it's close down the stretch. So they've, you know, and I just don't believe they can beat the Clippers four times by 8, 10, 12, 14 points.
Yeah, I'm not saying, I'm just, I'm trying to gauge the level of trouble the Clippers are in. You know, where's the water? Is it waist deep? Is it knee deep? Is it shoulder deep?
I think if they hike their britches up a little bit, they can avoid
it. I'm going to recommend some capris and say you're going to sail on.
There you go.
Okay. I'll tell you what, Luka is, there's going to be teams that are going to spend years trying to figure out how to defend him, because
it's fun to watch. That's for sure.
It's easy to forget how big he is
and how young he is.
I just don't see him as a young player.
But he's 21.
I mean, you watch him. No. I acknowledge he's 21, but I don't see him as a young player. When you watch him play, you don't feel that way.
What's scary about him right now, the best way to defend him is hope he falls in love with his step back three.
He's just terrible.
And if he becomes, he's a 32% 3-point shooter. And a big problem for them in the clutch is him relying on that. It's just, ugh. I'm not saying he's going to become James Harden on those, but if that becomes an effective shot for him, I don't know. I don't know what you do with it.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
All right, well, let's talk about the lottery real quick. It's not a particularly exciting draft. And we also, you know, so by the way, Woj reported today that that it looks like free agency, which was scheduled for October 18th, is going to be delayed. I have heard, and other people have been saying it, that there's a possibility if free agency gets delayed, that the draft would get delayed. Right now, the draft is October 13th. And Adam Silver, in an interview on the draft lottery with Rachel Nichols, said tonight, he basically said December 1st is not happening. And the reason he said that is not because they have to have CBA negotiations, which they do, but because they have decided, you know, for the time being, you know, we're in a fluid time and place, but for the time being, they have tabled the idea of playing without fans next year, which means that they've tabled the idea of another bubble environment. Now, will they change their mind in 3 months? Maybe, to get another season, and maybe they will. But they want to play with fans, and maybe not a full arena, but they want to put people in an arena. So they're going to delay and hope that there's antivirals or fast testing, or hope for all of us that there's an effective and available vaccine. And so, guys, I think the season's headed way back, to be honest with you, because and I get it, like the cost of playing without fans is enormous. And then the idea of having a bubble, which is also, you know, the NBA is spending money, like $1.5 million a day to put this bubble on. So anyway, we had a draft lottery, and the draft lottery is often a pivotal thing. And the Timberwolves won it for the second time in 5 years. But I just real quick want to talk about the Knicks, who's this is officially become absurd.
I know.
They literally have not moved up in decades.
But they move down every year.
They moved down two spots today. Two spots from behind them jumped them. you know, it's always awkward when you find out that you either stayed put or moved down because they show your face on TV. And like poor Leon Rose wasn't expecting to be on TV because he was at least two picks away. And then it was like, and with the eighth pick, the New York Knicks, and they show Leon, and Leon's like,
yeah. Where are the frozen envelopes when they need them?
Well, I think the Knicks would tell you that they would rather have luck in next year's draft lottery than this year's draft lottery. But who am I kidding? They've never had luck in the draft. They haven't had since Patrick Ewing.
Yeah.
So the Timberwolves get the number one pick. But I think more interesting is that the Warriors get number two. And that's an interesting spot because there's a dispute about who the number one pick is going to be. And if you're in the number two slot, and there's fluidity in opinion. In other words, some teams may value guys at two, some team may value the same guy at four, or some team, you know, may think that they can jump up and get in front of another guy. When there's not clear delineation on where the picks fall, there becomes some value in moving around because you want to go get your player. And the Warriors are in perfect position to potentially trade this pick. Not only because it's the number two pick, but they also have the $17 million Andre Iguodala trade exception. So they could trade the pick for a player of who's making real money. And so coming out of this, you know, and we'll be talking about the players themselves going on later, Jackie, but I think the Warriors have to feel pretty good about getting one of those top three spots to start, you know, figuring out what they could do because they intend to come back very strong.
Okay, but here's the thing I would counter with. So you mentioned that $17 million trade exception, but think about what's transpired here. You've had a season that was a dismal season for the Warriors for a whole host of reasons, and then one that stopped with no fans, no revenue. So these NBA teams are losing millions and millions and millions of dollars. As you know, the Warriors' payroll is already top-heavy with Klay Thompson and Draymond and Steph Curry and all these players. So are they in a position where they're going to want to add, let's say, a $17.2 million player to a cap that's probably not going to be what you once thought it was going to be, with the potential of no fans in your arena, and you're going to get over the cap even more and pay even more penalties? Now, maybe the NBA is going to make allowances for this. I don't know. I don't think so. So I tend to think, because you have to think about this. And you know, Joe Lacob he's swung for the fences. He's, you know, you can't argue with what he's done. But I just think it's a little different this year, guys, because the financials are different. They're very dire. And
well, but the financials have been really friendly to the Warriors for a while now.
But that was yesterday.
And when you I hear you, but tomorrow you have, knock on wood, a healthy Steph Curry, a healthy Klay Thompson, a healthy Draymond Green, a very defined window with those guys. It's not like you're looking at a 6 to 8 year window. It's shorter than that. So, and how much is a, you know, 19-year-old going to come in and help you in that very fine window?
It depends which player you choose, number one. So maybe what the Warriors do is they trade down to get a player that is more NBA ready, and you trade down to that because it might not be the long-term best player. So you trade down and you get something else for it. Plus you get a new player. I'm playing devil's advocate because I
no, Jackie, you are raising a very good point, and let me give you some details. Most teams make between 30 and about 45% of their revenue from their arenas. Right. They're, you know, not only ticket sales, but beer sales and suites, and also naming rights, not just the naming rights on the building, but the naming rights on clubs. The Warriors make 80% of their revenue that way, partially because their brand arena new. Is yeah. so is brand new and has all that right. money out there. The other thing is that for a large television market like San Francisco, they do not have a world-class television, local television deal. They don't have a television deal like the Knicks or the Lakers do. Having said that, two things here. Number one, they now know that the NBA is very determined to play games with fans, at least some fans in the building. So that's a relief to them. Number two, Joe Lacob, their owner, his I don't know if it's his doctorate or it's his master's degree, is in epidemiology. He is very in tune with the advancements in this, and he is confident that he will be able to get fans in the arena. But here's the most important part. The Warriors are just different when it comes to finances. So Joe Lacob has established an option of borrowing $250 million against the ownership in the arena. They have opened up the possibility of a credit line of $250 million. And I don't even necessarily think that it's the Warriors need the money. I don't think that they're like struggling to make their
payroll. No, I'm not saying that. I'm not
saying that. As far as I know, they haven't laid anybody off. But for example, if the Utah Jazz needed money to get them through this, you know, they have some free agents. They got to re-sign Donovan Mitchell. There's an opportunity to extend Rudy Gobert. If the Utah Jazz needed money, they couldn't get $250 million against their building. You know, every team, by the way, can borrow $325 million. I'm not going to go too far down.
I thought they boosted that.
They did. They boosted it from 250 to 325. Okay. But the Warriors are so – there's so much faith in them that they have opened up this $250 million credit line. So knowing the Warriors and knowing Joe Lacob the way that I do, I think they're more likely to say, well, listen, we can tap this credit line. This is another advantage. The Trailblazers trust one of the richest. But, you know, the Jazz can't do that. The Suns can't do that. The Rockets can't do that. The Pelicans can't do that. The Nuggets can't do that. We can do it. So I actually think that if there's a trade that they think can carry them up, I'm not saying they're going to do it just to add, you know, a sixth man who makes $15 million just to do it. But if they see a deal that they like, that they think can really boost them forward, I think they will have the money, even in this time, to do it, because they have that cash cow arena. If I had money, if I had tens of millions of dollars and there was a piece of the Chase Center available for sale, I feel pretty good about buying a piece.
Let me just say this, and with all due respect to Mr. Lacob, who has a degree in epidemiology, if you say so, even Dr. Fauci doesn't know what's going to happen. So you can study it all you want. None of us know what's going to happen. And I understand that Adam Silver wants to get fans back in the arena. Of course, we all want that. But we don't know what the timeline of that is. We're guessing. Everybody's guessing. So that's a lot of money to guess on. That's all I'm saying.
Your point is well taken. And I think we're going to see many teams out there. Like, you know, there's a handful of teams in small markets that have, or, you know, sort of not rich markets, I shouldn't say. Like, for example, the Atlanta Hawks, okay? The Atlanta Hawks have $30 million in salary cap space. Do you honestly think that they're going to spend all $30 million of it when they're in a situation where they're not contending? And now they do want to make the playoffs, but they're not contending for a title.
Well, I'll say this, though. Not having fans in the arenas is not like a big adjustment for the Hawks.
Oh, that's a cheap shot.
Sorry.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but it's still
And the Hawks are going in the right direction. I mean,
the Hawks Travis, are money
Travis,
franchise,
Travis so knows he, what he's doing. I talked with John Collins this week. I'm doing this little outside the bubble thing, which – no one will ever see because there's too many games being played and too many stories been written about the games. But no, I get it. Totally understand it. But, you know, John Collins was a 2010 guy this year, and we're always talking about these 50-40-90 guys. He's a 50-40-80 guy. I mean, he's a really, really good young talent. And we talk about Trae Young a lot because he's more fun to watch and all that. But Travis is, you know, Kevin Herter, they got pieces there.
They've got pieces to be entertaining.
I'm not saying they're there yet. But,
yeah. Also, the Hornets, who haven't moved up since like 1993, moved up to the number three pick. So they should get they have a couple of pieces there, but it hasn't been much to cheer for in Charlotte since Kemba Walker walked out the door. So that's good for them. And then
they did
the
move
Bulls
up.
Move up
for Kenny Atkinson, maybe. Who knows?
Ooh. Hey, a hell of a developer of young talent.
That would be
it would be a fantastic would be a really hire for hire. Them. And I think, I mean, Kenny's name has already been linked in published reports to the Bulls, and I think it'd be a great marriage.
I think Ime Udoka is going to get a close look there, as well as Darvin.
Yeah, Darvin. Darvin Ham does a great job.
Yeah, Darvin's going to. Yeah, and you know the fact you know Darvin Ham is with the Bucks. The fact that the Bud coaching tree is already bearing fruit,
right?
With Taylor
Jenkins, and the players really like and respect Darvin Ham. He's not one of these in your face guys that's you know drill sergeant kind of. He's got a great. I watch him a lot pregame. I've watched him with the players, including Giannis. And there's you can always tell when a coach has credibility with players, and he definitely does.
I remember seeing that with Tyronn Lue. Every game you'd ever see Tyronn Lue at as an assistant coach, he was an assistant with the Cavs. Players from the opposing team.
Well, like Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd has the same thing going on.
All right, well, we'll talk more about the lottery as we get closer to the draft, whenever that may be. And, of course, we'll talk a lot about the playoffs, which are raging onward. And I think we're going to have a long first round here. I think some of these series are destined for 6 or 7. So there's going to be some ebbs and flows for sure. But thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Jackie and Tim, thanks for staying up late. And our producer, Troy, back in Connecticut. Thank you for listening, and have a great rest of your week. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.